Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel.
Well, Shabbat Shalom, everyone. Chag Sameach. Here we are. It's the last day of Passover. You know, Sue and I were talking about it, and this year, and tell me if this is true for you, this has gone by fast. I mean, like the matzah is like gone, the gefilte fish is gone. You know? I love Passover. I love the smells. I love the tastes, you know? But it's like tonight is the last night. After Shabbat, go have a pizza. That would be a good thing to do, you know? But I'd like to look back on this Passover a little bit and think about one particular symbol which is really important for us, and that is the fourth cup of the four cups of wine that we had at our seders. Does anyone recall the name of that cup? You remember? It's the cup of the kingdom. Yeah, also called the cup of praise, but the cup of the kingdom. And of the four cups, it's the one that looks forward. And this morning, Joe, and the readings in particular, but Joe has called attention to this important reality that we're talking about the end. We're talking about where things are going, where history's going. And what I'd like to suggest this morning is that the promise of the last cup has real practical meaning for us. It's not just something that you know about one day in some vague theoretical sense. You know, yeah, that's great. Everything will work out. Yeah, in the meantime, what about now? So I would like to talk about the third cup, and I would like to focus, first of all, on just snippets of some of the passages we read, because they're so magnificent, and they paint a picture for us. When we think about Isaiah 11, one of the parts of the Haftorah passage that we read, listen to this. It says, a shoot will come from the stump of Jesse. Now, what do you think that image is? A shoot from a stump. And who's Jesse? Anyone know? David's father, King David's father. So that the shoot will come from a stump, Jesse. That is, this little shoot will protrude, will come to life. In the context here of the book of Isaiah has a lot of judgment on our people, but the story doesn't end with the tree being cut down. A shoot arises. And it's very interesting. From its roots, a branch will bear fruit. V'netzer mishertav yirpeh. Netzer means branch. And when you read the Besorah, the New Testament passages, there's a play on words having to do with Yeshua. He's a Nazarite. Do you hear the word netzer in there? Nazarite, netzer. People who in the first century who read Hebrew would understand that this is a prophecy having partial fulfillment in Yeshua's having come from Nazareth. He is a netzer. He is the branch referred to. So goes on to say, the Spirit of the Lord will rest on him. The spirit of chokhmah and binah, the spirit of wisdom and understanding, the spirit of counsel and might, the spirit of the knowledge and fear of the Lord, and he will delight in the fear of the Lord. Now, who is this talking about? This is talking about the Mashiach at the end of the age, who we understand to be Yeshua, that when he comes back, this is going to be the characteristic reality. This is it. No more imperfect governmental anything, just real goodness, and the spirit of knowledge and fear of the Lord, and he will delight in the fear of the Lord. And notice this, he will not judge by what his eyes see or decide by what he hears with his ears, but with righteousness he will judge the needy. With justice he will give decisions for the poor of the earth. So when it says he will not judge by what his eyes see, all that means is he's not going to judge superficially. It's not going to just be a casual kind of thing. A lot of injustices occur because judges don't look deeply at the facts of the case, and they just want to get through it and put the guy in jail and let that be it. But that's not going to be the way it is when Yeshua comes. It's going to be fantastic. That's the word. Now, it goes on to say, also, he will strike the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips he will slay the wicked. So bad guys get theirs, and that is part of the picture too. Please don't invent a God who's only nice, sweet, and kind. Because without justice, niceness and sweetness is not enough. Niceness and sweetness is not what we need. We need justice, and we need compassion and love and forgiveness. They go together. If you rob God of his role and Messiah of his role as judge, you end up with a truncated understanding, a very partial and very incomplete understanding. Maybe a vague comparison is when you raise children, if everything is always a yes to your child because you want to be nice, you'll raise a spoiled brat, right? But if you raise children with a lot of encouragement, but sometimes a little punch in the tushy does not hurt, you know? So we get that idea. And then it says in this passage, in that day, the root of Jesse will stand as a banner for the peoples. The nations will rally to him, and his resting place will be glorious. So in the book of Isaiah and throughout the Tanakh, you have this idea of God's covenant with the Jewish people, but it's always accompanied with his love for all the nations so that we, the Israel, becomes a conduit of that blessing to the nations. Everyone get that? It's really important, because if you don't understand that, this whole idea of chosenness sounds just like a kind of ethnocentric trip. It sounds like being better than everybody else, but that's never the spirit of it. No one's better than anybody when you really get down to it. Well, I don't mean that in absolute. I'm just saying that one group of people, you can't say they're the good ones and everyone else are the bad ones. It's just not true. It is just not true. But God has chosen, for reasons known to himself, to make Israel this conduit of blessing, but when the Messiah comes, there will be blessing on the whole world. Now, it's a great picture. It's a phenomenal picture. But the question, from a practical standpoint, is how do we get there? And another one of the passages that we read today speaks so directly to it that I thought I would just quote a little bit of it for you. The question is, how do we move toward this amazing day, which could come soon, could come a long time from now. We don't know for sure. But how do we move toward it as a community and as a people? Now, here's the passage. It's from the book that we often call Messianic Jews, Hebrews. Well, Hebrews, it feels a bit archaic, the Hebrews. Well, the Hebrews are the Jews, okay? So the book is sometimes called the Messianic Jews, but you could call it either. Call it Messianic Jews. It's the letter that was written by, we don't know for sure who wrote it. My inclination is that it was Rav Shaul, the Apostle Paul, who wrote it, and I have my reasons. Others have suggested other people. Scholars are divided on this point. But that's not the main thing. It's in the scripture, and it's something that we take as being precious and authoritative. And here is the passage I want to look at with you. By faith, he, that is Moses, left Egypt, not fearing the king's anger. He persevered because he saw him who was invisible. Now, that's very interesting. He saw him who was invisible. Got that? He saw him who was invisible. How? Well, again, the word that repeats again and again is the key. By faith, he kept the Passover and the application of blood so that the destroyer of the firstborn would not touch the firstborn of Israel. Okay? What is the key word that meanders through this entire passage from Messianic Jews or Hebrews 11? What is the one word? Do you know? It is faith. Emunah, faith. Emunah is the Hebrew root in Greek, that it was written in Greek, and Jews spoke Greek at this time. The word is pistis, but the idea of emunah and pistis in its Hebrew context would be both faith and faithfulness, and that's The implications of that are staggering, and we're not going to get into it. But faith is how it's translated. It could be translated faithfulness, but by faith. Okay, so that is how you get there. At the end of the day, this is a faith issue. Not a blind faith issue. I'll talk about that in a minute. But nonetheless, how do we move ahead? Day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, decade after decade, until you're old and you're not here anymore. How do you do it? This is the answer as given to us in this passage that we are just looking at a small portion of it today from the book of Hebrews. How you get there? Well, by faith. Rabbi Rich, that doesn't help a lot. We get that as a concept, but how do you make it real every day? That's what you should all be wondering, and that's what I want to speak to. It's not a matter of just abstract concepts, which for a couple of minutes make us feel good and affirmed, but then what do you do with it? I want to tell you what to do about it. And for this, having seen my favorite chiropractor, Rich, right over here, who's at services. Hello, Rich. Rich Margle. Excellent chiropractor. You need a chiropractor. This guy is cutting edge. He's whoa. And you are, and Sue and I have benefited very much from your practice, Rich. But there's one thing that occurs in Rich's practice, and that is there are times that he feels that you've got to have some supplements to help rebalance your system. You know what this is all about. We live in a world with so many environmental stresses, toxins, etc., etc. I'm sure you're all aware of all that. The food we eat has been depleted of nutrients, a lot of things. And so there are times when you got to take a supplement in order to rebalance what you are and to move ahead. And Rich will recommend those things. But here's the thing. You have to take it faithfully. If you buy it and let it sit there, not going to do you any good. But if you buy it and take it, it could do you some real good. So I, Dr. Rich, a different Dr. Rich here, I am going to give you some very practical suggestions about how to walk in faith. Remember, that's the operative term. That's going to carry us forward so that one day, whether we're alive at the time or whether we participate in that general resurrection at the end of the age, however it happens, we're going to experience what Isaiah talked about. So, here are the practical suggestions, and they are really quite practical. Here's one. The daily devar. How many of you are into the daily devar? Anybody? Yeah, we got some. I'd like to get more of you into it. Let me tell you what it is. It's a list of readings for every day, and if you spend 12 to 15 minutes a day reading, it'll take you through the entire Torah, the prophets, the writings, the Besorah, in 1 year. And then you start over again. You may say, oh, Rabbi Rich, I'm so busy already. How am I going to add yet another thing? Well, let me tell you, you'll do it if I can convince you it's worth it. And I can tell you from personal experience, because I do it, it is. It's that supplement that you take that rebalances you, because you and I are subject to so many other influences, radio, TV, blah, 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 the general atmosphere around us, that with that reading of the scripture, it refocuses us, rebalances our sense of reality. It gives us every day a little dose of things that at times you don't understand what you read. You may even run into some things you don't particularly like. That's cool. The point is that the daily devar has this way, as the weeks and months go by, strengthening your spiritual muscles, recalibrating your sense of what's most important and not so important, that's critical, and therefore will help you rebalance your life so that priorities are the right priorities, and the net result, it just tends to make you happier, because nothing makes us happier than experiencing the big wow of what God is doing. It energizes us, motivates us to compassion and love and service beyond ourselves, all kinds of positive things from taking this little pill every day, the daily devour. Let me mention something else. Here's a little one. This time of year, from Pesach to Shavuot, which is 50 days, the Union of Messianic Jewish Congregations, which is our community of congregations, we've been part since the very beginning, since, let's see, what would the year be, 1979, right? They ask each of the member congregations to ask each participant in each of those congregations to save a buck a day, a dollar a day, one, for 50 days, and then bring it to the synagogue, and we put all those together, and we send the union a check so that they can do their good work for the Messianic Jewish movement. A dollar. I mean, I went to Starbucks the other day. I had a grande mocha, half with half the usual chocolate syrup, extra hot. It cost me almost $4. Anyone else? You know what I'm talking about? And yet, we don't have any particular compunction doing that, and etc. So it's like a buck a day. It's no big deal. But you bring it to the congregation, I'll remind you about this, obviously. You say, what does that have to do with faith? Because it is the little exercises, the little enactments of giving, the little doing this and then doing that, along with more substantial giving, of course. But it affects us. It changes us. It reminds us. Reminds us of the rhythm of the holy days. It reminds us that walking with God isn't a matter only of maintaining our own emotional equilibrium, but also a matter of giving and caring and doing. And it has a spillover effect. That is pill number two. Let me give you one or two more. One more. Here's a little pill. In a couple of weeks, a fellow named Perry Phillips will be here. Perry Phillips is a PhD astronomer. Sue and I have known him and his wife Elaine, again, since 1972, I suppose. He has his PhD from the Cornell Space and Radio Physics Center. And Perry has been here before to teach on the correlation of science and faith. Again, you may say, well, what has that got to do with anything? What it has to do with is I make an assumption about you. And I want to tell you what the assumption is. The assumption is that you want to be a fully integrated human being. You want your faith, your life of faith, and your beliefs about what the world is actually like to have a certain coherence. Am I right or am I wrong? Yeah. Don't you? You don't want to have to leave your brains at the door when you walk into synagogue. Right? You don't want that. I don't want that either. I couldn't do that. I'm not wired that way. And I don't think you are either. You have different personality types and different gravitations. But what I want to tell you is, this is a third pill. Perry is going to be speaking to us. And by the way, there's a youth-led service that day, which is so exciting. May 11th, youth-led service. And Perry is going to speak, and he's going to do a talk during the service and one after the service. And he is going to be talking, for example, about how peculiarities of the solar system, very, very delicate measurements of various elements of the solar system, elements meaning qualities of the solar system, they're so finely tuned that to imagine that these things came about by blind chance, impossible. And he is going to present that to us. And then he has another talk which he'll do about archaeology and some of the latest finds which so well substantiate the picture that we get in the Bible of the times that it was written. And you're going to walk out and you're going to go, I'm encouraged by that. My world has been put together a little more. That's third pill. All of these, to change the metaphor slightly, all of these pills are really red pills. You know what I'm alluding to? The matrix. You got the red pill and the blue pill. The red pill will lead you to truth. The blue pill leads you to ongoing self-deception. Again, you got to take the pills, and you got to take them often. Example, practice, musical practice. You got to do it all the time. Remember the pills. And remember, too, one other important point, that when you feel secure in your worldview as a follower of the God of Israel, there is a huge spillover effect to society at large. And I want to talk about this just for a minute, if you'll indulge me. I know it's going a little long today. I want to give you an example. Did you know that as the secular worldview has taken hold and taken over in Europe, and religion has been marginalized, the birth rates of people have plummeted? Are you aware of that? As I read, Spain was like 1.7 child per family. You got to have like 2.2 children to replenish this society. And undoubtedly, this is a function of many interrelated factors, and to reduce it just to the one faith factor, I don't think would be honest. But I think it's a big factor, and here's why. A society that collectively believes that God has said, be fruitful and multiply, you're going to have kids. And you're going to believe at some level that God is going to smile on you for doing that, and kids are the right thing, kids are the future. But what if you are a secularist? You have no God that you believe in to protect you. It's all up to you. And there's no afterlife, and there's no transcendent reason for doing much of anything. And the gravitation in secular societies is to have very few children. And again, it's just one reason of others. There's economic and political, social facts. But I want to suggest that one of the reasons for very small families is a certain self-protectiveness creeps into the body politic. And people are not able to see, wow, be fruitful and multiply. That's the greatest. I'm going to be a mom. I'm going to be a dad. And I want to have more than 1.7 kids. Don't know what a 0.7 kid looks like. That's another whole story. So I want to mention that to you, because I think that the implications from a societal standpoint are staggering. Or to give you a negative example, you remember Yasser Arafat? He was kind of a bad guy, a terrorist. He said the womb of the Arab woman, the late Palestinian strongman averred, is my strongest weapon. Meaning, you know, have high, big birth rates and, you know, the secularists will lose and you'll have more and more people. This is a big subject. But I will say that in Israel, the latest polls show that the number of children that Israeli women are having is going up. Yeah, the average is 3. And undoubtedly, the Haredi, the Orthodox, contributed to that dramatically, but also among some of the more less practicing than the Orthodox, we're seeing that trend. And so we're glad about that. Faith makes a difference. There is a very wonderful phrase in the Bible that I want to leave you with today. And again, we're trying to go the distance, personally and as a community, to the day when the root of Jesse, Yeshua, comes back, makes everything right. And the phrase is in the Bible, it's in the rabbinic writings, it's B'tach B'Shem. You want to say that with me? B'tach B'Shem. What does B'tach B'Shem mean? Trust in the Lord, trust in Adonai. Everything I've said to you, we can boil it down to that one wonderful little phrase, trust in the Lord. And if you do, your life won't be easy, that I can't promise. But if you trust in the God of the Bible and trust in Yeshua, the risen one, the King, everything is going to be okay. And you'll have joy and you'll have the energy to build a better society and you will be happy. And with that thought, Shabbat Shalom.
Please, O Lord, our God, may the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, O Lord, our God, may the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. In the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel. In the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel. And the descendants of your people Israel be those who know your name and study your Torah. Messiah.